All right. Let's open our Bibles this afternoon to Revelation chapter 13. We've been to this chapter a few times before, Revelation chapter 13. But in light of the much publicized conference that is being hosted by the Vatican in Rome this very weekend, titled Exploring the Mind, Body, and Soul, How Innovation and Novel Delivery Systems Improve Human Health, talking about vaccines. This is a world conference with dignitaries to basically promote these vaccines, about which I'll have more to say later in the message. I believe it's very timely for me to return today to our series of studies through the book of Revelation. About time to do that. And for those of you who came today to hear a Mother's Day message, I'm sure you'll be very happy to hear that I'll be preaching today about the mother of harlots. In particular, about mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And in doing so, I need to state that addressing and exposing this mother of harlots, as we've actually done in many messages already, and some of what I'll be saying today will be review for you guys, but perhaps much needed review, and it's a very timely review. In addressing and exposing this mother of harlots system, with its idolatrous system of worship, its false Christianity, and its involvement and control over the political and the banking systems of this world, is a huge subject in and of itself that I've taught much on in former messages, of course, and that for purposes of this series, going through Revelation, needs to be addressed again. And so I'm opening the subject today, and I'm probably going to take at least two or maybe three messages to actually cover this one subject or this subtopic within the series of messages. I brought 10 messages on this series beginning last December through February, the last of which, the end of February, covered the 70th week of Daniel chapter 9 that we see summarized in Revelation chapter 6, actually, where Revelation 6 basically goes through the outpouring of the seal judgments during the tribulation period that occurred during that 70th week of Daniel 9. And then after actually noting several theories, we tackled the identification of the 144,000 servants of God that we see both in Revelation 7 and in Revelation chapter 14. Revelation chapter 14. Then after that message, we took somewhat of a breather from the series over the past couple of months, although I did bring a message 4 weeks ago about the warfare that we must wage against the beast system that we see pictured here in the 13th chapter of this book, to which topic I need to return today. For well over a year now, the entire world has been under siege, brought about through the rather well-orchestrated global deception. Global deception, the so-called COVID-19 pandemic. As military and political analyst Joel Skousen noted in this past week's World Affairs brief, the world will never be the same as it was before. To put that in perspective, I'd add that until Jesus returns to clean up this mess, we will not see any return to what we might call normalcy, and will not enjoy even the limited amount of liberty and freedom that existed before this deception was perpetrated. I want to quote a little bit from Joel Skousen's World Affairs brief from last Friday. He summarizes the situation very well. He says, the powers that be have developed the perfect pseudo-medical fear formula for continual control, a not very deadly version of a commonly contagious virus that mutates rapidly so it never goes away, a manipulable PCR test that can produce scary high numbers of cases, so-called cases, despite a lack of symptoms, mostly false positives, of course, an exaggerated claim about asymptomatic spreaders so that even healthy people can be stigmatized as a threat, and an outrageously falsified death rate, labeling anyone who tests positive or is even suspected of dying from COVID as a COVID death. I mean, even car accident victims are labeling as COVID deaths. Skousen says, instead of mere comorbidity. All this has led to an even bigger lie about the so-called vaccine, which is touted as safe and effective, but which is neither, writes Joel. People who accept this hyped up fear allow our world to change forever. And it's amazing to me, as we go out in public, you go to the store. How many people, I mean, now in Inverness, it's not quite so bad, but I mean, just people are everywhere wearing masks in their cars, out in the parking lot. They're wearing these face diapers, and they're so deluded, and they're allowing, in so doing, they're ignoring the facts and allowing the world to be changed forever. Surrendering their liberties and their ability to breathe clean air as well. It's just crazy. Joel says, the unnecessary economic shutdowns, idiotic mask mandates and social distancing, censorship of all truth exposing these lies, social media tracking, a reliance on government stimulus payments over never-ending unemployment payments. By the way, I would also add kicking certain ministries off of YouTube, you know, and shutting down the truth on all of these social platforms. Most of these evils, he writes, even though hatched high up within the deep state, that's what he calls the powers that be, have been perpetrated in lockstep by state and local government officials and private corporations, effectively evading our ability to look to the usual suspect of tyranny, a centralized, all-controlling government. Tyranny has now been decentralized and privatized to give the planners and the perpetrators at the global conspiracy level another curtain to hide behind. Yeah, very well put. And left us with less recourse to combat them and a string of puppets in front of the curtain. He writes, and the biggest puppet of all occupying the president's seat. He says, almost done, this quote. He says, it seems every tinpot dictator, health official, mayor, and governor has become a yes man to this falsified agenda, often due to the self-imposed ignorance and slavish obedience to so-called medical authority. Dr. Fauci, medical authority. Like Hitler's Dr. Joseph Mengele. That's their medical authority. And by some who are outright knowing conspirators. Only two governors, he writes, Kristi Noem of South Dakota and Ron DeSantis of Florida, have acted to resist or to free up their people from the worst of these COVID restrictions. But neither have had the courage to combat the falseness of the COVID or vaccine agenda that provoked it all. That's right. Making it harder for whoever follows them from taking a similar stand for liberty. End quote. To that, I would add that this past April 2nd, Governor DeSantis signed an executive order banning the implementation of vaccine passports here in Florida. And then just over a week ago, the Florida House passed Senate Bill 2006, banning businesses, schools, or government entities from requiring proof of COVID-19 vaccinations. And that has gone to DeSantis' desk for signature. But with Norwegian Cruise Line in the news now, threatening to pull its business from Florida because it demands all its employees and I think passengers as well to be vaxxed. We're waiting to see if what DeSantis is going to do in response to that development. Either way, I'm still personally glad to be located in Florida right now. But as I've mentioned and as Joel Skousen pointed out, the problem remains that despite these actions being taken, Governor DeSantis has never even hinted at the possibility that the pandemic is a hoax, which it is, or that the vaccines are in any way dangerous, which they are. And he continues to tout his so-called success at getting the elderly population vaccinated quickly. Well, I don't call that success. I still personally believe that the Roman Catholic Ron DeSantis is being groomed to be picked as Donald Trump's comeback running mate in 2024. By the way, just as Florida law requires vaccines for school children, except for certified health or religious exemptions, I believe that the door will remain open in Florida for COVID vaccine to be eventually mandated across the board. Because that is clearly the agenda of the powers that be. That's what they want to have happen. This thing is not going away. And just in case you haven't heard this bit of news yet, Reuters news agency reported the following this past Friday, 3 days ago. India's main opposition leader, Rahul Gandhi, warned Friday that unless the deadly second COVID-19 wave sweeping the country was brought under control, it would devastate India as well as threaten the rest of the world. We've got this new violent strain now, allegedly. In a letter, Gandhi implored Prime Minister Modi to prepare for another national lockdown. Accelerate a countrywide vaccination program and scientifically track the virus and its mutations. Well, I wonder who Gandhi is working for here. It's pretty clear. Gandhi said the world's second most populous nation had a responsibility in a globalized and interconnected world. Sounds like the Pope talking, doesn't it? To stop the explosive growth of COVID-19 within its borders. British Prime Minister Boris said on Friday that the government needed to handle very carefully the emergence of new coronavirus strains in India that have since started to spread in the UK. So we got these new, this isn't going to go away. That's my point. It's not going to go away. This is the agenda. And so then, I believe that the powers that be may well keep this fake pandemic or more like it going until Jesus comes, in my estimation. As stated in my message 4 weeks ago, I believe it's still true, and in some locations more than others, that those who refuse to pledge their allegiance, give their obeisance to the devil's beast system, who refuse to believe its lies, or to wear its mask, or to take its jab in their arm, are right now being identified, marginalized, and in some places, like Canada, even criminalized, put in jail, as the Jews in Germany were in Europe before and during the Nazi Holocaust, World War II. And it remains quite obvious that for some reason, they said then, what can only be a very nefarious, diabolical reason, the powers that be want every human being on the planet to receive a wholly unnecessary injection into their veins of a potentially dangerous, gene-altering serum to allegedly fight off an alleged virus, which alleged virus only poses a serious threat to less than 1% of the population and can easily and effectively be treated by other means. But those other means of treatment have been hidden, silenced, and kept out of public media discussion. And instead, the beast's globally controlled media is relentlessly and daily continuing to push this so-called vaccine that the powers that be, which I'll be identifying more clearly today, want everybody on the planet to receive. That's very clear. And as we know, that diabolical reason that they're doing this has nothing whatsoever to do with anyone's health. Instead, it's all about gaining total control over every human being on the planet. So what does the Bible have to say about these things? I say, in addition to identifying the main culprits in all of this, the Bible tells us precisely where all these things are going. We read in Revelation 20, verse 2 to 3, that one day and hopefully soon, on that glorious day when the Lord Jesus returns to this earth in power and glory to take his throne over the kingdoms of this world, one of his first orders of business will be to, quote, lay hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, to bind him for 1,000 years and to cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years should be fulfilled. But that day's not here yet. And right now, that old serpent, the devil, is deceiving the nations on this world on a massive scale that I believe has never been achieved in human history. And in addition to the deceptions of idolatry and the false religion that the devil has always brought upon humanity, I believe the reference to the devil deceiving the nations in that verse, Revelation 20, verse 3, is at least in part also a reference to the very type of mass global deception that the devil has worked through its minions over the past year through this COVID-19 false, fake, staged, make-believe so-called pandemic, with much more globally orchestrated deception to follow. Over the past year, via this deception, the world has been effectively transformed into a global prison camp, with every inmate basically being expected to wear a face diaper, a face mask, constantly to breathe his own CO2 exhaust and get a jab in his arm. And ultimately, as should be clear to anyone who knows his Bible, all of this has been pre-planned for decades and, in fact, centuries, and is now being implemented to finally force the world, upon the world, the mark of the beast that we read about right in this chapter, beginning in verse 16, where we read, "And he caused it all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. These verses are found at the end of a chapter in which two entities rise to power that John calls beasts. As with Daniel's prophecies in Daniel chapter 7, these two beasts we know symbolize two separate world empires, of which we see here one is political and military and the other is religious. We see this first beast in Revelation 13, verse 1, where John writes, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns. Upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority." Keeping a mark in Revelation 13, turn back to Daniel chapter 7, please. As we've pointed out before, the imagery here of this beast that is part leopard, part bear, and part lion shows this beast to be one and the same beast or empire as the fourth beast of Daniel 7, which we see in that chapter is a conglomeration or a merger of the empires that went before it. Read in Daniel 7, verse 3. Verse 3, Daniel says, "Four great beasts came up from the sea." Read in verse 4, "The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings." Verse 5, "And I beheld another beast, the second, like unto a bear, and it raised up itself on one side. It had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it." After this, Daniel says, "I looked, and behold, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it." And we read in verse 7, "I saw in the night visions. Behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it. It was diverse from all beasts that were before it, and it had ten horns." This fourth beast is the same beast, the first beast that we see in Revelation 13. As interpreted here in verse 17, these four beasts symbolize four kings that bear rule over four world empires, defined in the context here, and as we've seen also before in chapters 2, 8, and 10 of Daniel's prophecy. First beast here is Babylon, followed then by the Medo-Persian Empire. The bear symbolizes the Medo-Persian Empire, and then the leopard here symbolizes the empire, the Greco-Macedonian Empire of Alexander the Great, which is then followed by this fourth beast, which in context is the Roman Empire. And an extremely important observation that we need to remember about these beasts is that this fourth beast began to dominate the then known world before the time of Christ. And it remains active in this context and in power until the day that the Lord Jesus establishes his kingdom on this earth. This fourth beast remains in power to some extent. We read in verse 13, "I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. There was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed." And so that fourth beast remains in power in this prophecy, in this context, until Jesus comes to establish his kingdom. So that fourth empire remains, or is in fact revived, actually, so as to be in existence when Christ sets up his kingdom on this earth, and is therefore, as confirmed by the ten horns on the beast, one and the same as John describes in Revelation 13. What John says was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. Back to Revelation 13. We're going to read about that beast again here in Revelation 13. This fourth beast is seen here. So here, John's given a vision of the same beast that Daniel saw, with more detail being given at this time to John. Verse 3, "I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death." I saw one of his heads, one of those seven heads, as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And so we see here, as we see also in Daniel 7 and Daniel 11, this empire is ruled by a man of war, an invader of nations, in command of a mighty military that no nation can conquer. Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? read then in Revelation 13, verse 5, and there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power is given unto him to continue 42 months. Again, for a quick review, this time period of 42 months, stated elsewhere in Revelation as 1,260 days, must be taken literally. That must be taken literally, even though since the time of Martin Luther, Protestant and Baptist historicists have used a concocted day-year theory we've talked about in the past to suggest that this 42 months, 1,260 days actually means 1,260 years. They say that so that they can identify this beast as the ongoing office of the Roman Catholic papacy that continued for centuries. However, there is no theory or principle of scriptural interpretation that really allows the historicists to stretch this 42 months here into 1,260 years. Maybe a day-year theory, 1,260 days, but not 42 months. And they insist on doing that anyway. They say even these 42 months means 1,260 years. To repeat, I believe the reason that the Holy Spirit told John to write 42 months in this passage rather than 1,260 days as he does in Revelation 11 and 12 is to drive the point home and make it clear that this time frame is to be taken literally, not figuratively. And which time frame of 42 months actually is in fact the same time period we see in Daniel 9:27 in the latter half, that 70th week of Daniel 9. And so it's the second half of the tribulation period that we see here. That's that 3.5 years during which this beast will have complete dictatorial rule over the entire earth. And by the way, this is also why the same time period is described both in Daniel 7:25 and 12:7 and also in Revelation 12:14 as a time, times, and half a time. So it's described as 42 months, 1,260 days, and a time, times, and half a time, meaning a year, 2 years, and a half a year, 3.5 years. So that's what time, times, half a time means. So this 42 months must be taken literally. We read in Revelation 12:12 that the devil knows his time is short. And so his man of sin will in fact have complete totalitarian rule over the entire globe for a short time. 42 months or 3.5 years as we read here. Through this first global empire that we see symbolized in this chapter. We also see in verse 1 here, this beast has 7 heads and 10 horns. Upon his horns, 10 crowns. Upon his head's the name of blasphemy. We'll come back to those 10 horns. But for now, I'll just say that as we see in this book of Revelation and also in Daniel, the horns on this beast represent various kings or rulers that rise up to reign over the empire. Reading on, we see the same characteristics of this beast that we see described repeatedly in the Old Testament prophet Daniel's prophecies of this same man. Revelation 13:6, he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. We see that in Daniel 9 and Daniel 11 and 12. It was given unto him to make war with the saints. We see that also in Daniel 7. And to overcome them. And power, meaning authority, was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Verse 9, if any man have an ear, let him hear. John then sees a second beast coming up out of the earth. Revelation 13, verse 11. I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. He had 2 horns like a lamb and spake as a dragon. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. Deadly wound was healed, I mentioned before. I believe that first beast being the Roman Empire, that deadly wound, I believe, was inflicted on that empire at the Protestant Reformation. That empire became morphed into the Holy Roman Empire, basically ruled by the Pope of Rome. And then when the Pope of Rome lost his temporal power over the kings of the earth, the Protestant Reformation, I believe that's when this fatal head wound occurred. And then he basically is revived later on. And I believe that's that empire regaining its power, as it has done through the creation of its vassal state, the USA, I believe. So His deadly wound is healed. He's regained his temporal power. Verse 13, and he doeth great wonder so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on earth in sight of men. That's the second beast. And deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by his sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Verse 16, he caused it all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom, let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So that's the chapter. And so then, we see two beastly empires here that work in concert together, first and second beast. While the first beast in this chapter represents a global political and military empire, the second beast here having two horns like a lamb. There's those horns. Two horns like a lamb, but speaking as a dragon, represents a global religious empire. Just as we see today, the American Empire working hand in glove with the Vatican. And we've talked about that many times in the past. As stated recently also, we need to notice here that it is in fact the second beast of this chapter that has a major role in deceiving the world to accept this mark. I believe without any doubt in my mind that the two beastly entities seen here in Revelation 13 are the same two entities that we see in Revelation 17. The harlot that rides the beast, we're going to see in Revelation 17, signifying the Roman Catholic papacy, seen also in this chapter as the second beast, having two horns like a lamb. It's extremely interesting to me that this beast is symbolized as having two horns. Those horns, I believe, just as the ten horns on the first beast, represent separate men who rule that empire. The two horns, in fact, represent the two men that will be and that are in control of that empire. One of whom, also known as the false prophet that we see in Revelation 16, 19, and 20. I believe those two horns on that second beast of Revelation 13. Those two horns, I believe, represent the authority of the Vatican's vast religious and banking empire, the authority over which, as I said, is shared by two men, the visible pope, I believe, and known as the white pope, who always dons his white vestments, and the other, commonly known as the black pope, that being the superior general of the Jesuit order, always dressed in black, remaining in the shadows for several centuries, having been the actual power behind the papacy. We've talked about this a lot in our video, America to Babylon. So like the yin-yang here, we've got the black pope and the white pope, basically both working the same agenda. Both of whom pretend to be Christian, hence two horns like a lamb, but who actually serve their father the devil. And so when they may be heard to speak, they speak as a dragon. And as we've shown in our video and messages about America the Babylon, daughter of the harlot, I believe the undeniable facts, documented facts of history, will prove that the Vatican has, in fact, not all openly, but definitely clandestinely and secretively regained the sway that it once held over the kings of the earth via the infiltration of its Jesuit agents into the governments that exist on every continent of the planet, which is how they have basically orchestrated this entire global hoax through their Jesuit agents operating in every nation on earth. Especially, as we know, taking hold of the American government in Washington, D.C. Turn over to Revelation 17. Revelation 17. The control that this second beast has over the nations of the world is then pictured here in Revelation 17. Verse 1, there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and he talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, and I'll show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. Upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. John writes, and I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration, John says. And the angel said unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman, and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the 7 heads and 10 horns, just as that first beast we saw in Revelation 13. 7 heads and 10 horns, same beast. The beast that thou sawest was and is not. It lost its power for a while, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life in the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not, and yet is. It came back to power. That's the Roman Empire. Revelation 13, we saw two entities there that John calls beasts. In Revelation 17, we again see two separate entities. And what we need to see today is that these are the same two entities. They have both, in fact, manifested in the world for many centuries. On that point, I would completely agree with historicists. And in fact, I could possibly be referred to as a partial historicist. All the many years I've studied this book held that some of the symbolic language in the Revelation has to refer to historical events and entities. As to the general identity of these two entities, I also agree in many ways with traditional historicists, including the 18th century Baptist expositor, pastor, and commentator John Gill, who states in his commentary that the woman in view here represents the Roman Catholic Church with all of its Babylonian idolatry, its prayer beads, icons, Mariology, and purgatory, and abominable priesthood and sacraments, all of which are traced back to Babylonian idolatrous worship. And that the beast that this woman is riding here represents the Roman Empire being dominated under her spell and control. And again, both of these entities have existed for many centuries. The woman in this passage is not Freemasonry, as some have suggested. It's not Judaism, as many have suggested. It is not Jewish Zionism, although at present it is intimately associated with all three of those interests and basically controls Freemasonry, especially behind the scenes. To the contrary, this woman can be, is and can be none other than as she was identified by the Reformers, which is the Roman Catholic Papacy. And the beast that this woman is riding is not, as some have suggested, the Islamic religion of Muhammad, but we'll see that this is. We compare this with what we looked at in Daniel 7, Daniel 9, 10, etc. Has to be the Roman Empire, which existed in John's day, and as it is now being revived as a confederation of nations in our day through the UN, forced upon the world by Rome's vassal state, the USA. So again, John saw the same beast in Revelation 13, one of the same beasts as the fourth beast that Daniel saw in Daniel 7, except that in those chapters, Daniel 7 and Revelation 13, we don't see any woman riding the beast in those chapters, which is simply because the beast itself, the Roman Empire, existed at long before the time of John's writing. But the woman, which is the Roman Catholic Church or the papacy, did not rise to power until a few centuries later. And so I want to remind us today of a very significant recent event, actually that happened 2 years ago, directly related to this passage of Scripture I mentioned 2 years ago in a message on this topic. In March of 2019, when America's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made a trip to Israel, while he was there, he visited Jerusalem's Western Wall, known as the Wailing Wall there. He was accompanied, if you recall, by Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which was the first time that an American diplomat visited the wall accompanied by an Israeli head of state. First time that happened. Interestingly, also, after they visited the wall, Netanyahu escorted Pompeo into the tunnels under the Temple Mount, actually, to visit an alleged Sanhedrin chamber or synagogue to view what they have there as a model of their planned third temple. On that same day, I think during that visit, Donald Trump abruptly tweeted in a major foreign policy shift that Washington had finally formalized recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, which was a rather controversial move. That was Syrian territory that was captured in the Israeli 1967 Six-Day War. and has been occupied ever since. So after that, Netanyahu and Pompeo held a joint news conference, if you remember, in which Netanyahu made some extremely revealing statements following Trump's announcement about the identity of these beasts here in this chapter, I believe, directly related. Netanyahu said, "President Trump has just made history. I called him. I thanked him on behalf of the people of Israel. He did it again. First, he recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital, moved the U.S. embassy there. Then he pulled out of the disastrous Iran treaty and reimposed sanctions. Now he did something of equal historic importance. He recognized Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. He did so at a time when Iran is trying to use Syria as a platform to attack and destroy Israel," quote unquote. Then after a few more remarks about the Feast of Purim and Haman's plot to destroy the Jews 2,500 years ago, Netanyahu said as follows. First, he said, "I said to the secretary that last time Pompeo visited Jerusalem didn't end well. Last time Pompeo visited Jerusalem didn't end well." That was a reference to AD 70. "But this is a different time. Rome and Jerusalem clashed over values. We had a great tragedy for the Jewish people." Yeah, they were wiped out and driven out of the land. Talking about AD 70. That's a reference to Rome's final destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, which is far more serious than a clash over values, as Netanyahu very mildly put it. The first observation I want to make here is that Netanyahu first connected the name of Pompeo with Rome, which is very interesting. This would be a reference to the highly successful Roman general, Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus, also known as Pompey the Great, who was involved in the Judean Civil War of 65 BC. Then also, of course, not only did Netanyahu connect the name Pompeo with Rome, but he also identified America itself in his remarks there as the new Rome. Netanyahu said, "The last time Pompeo visited Jerusalem didn't end well, but this is a different time. Rome and Jerusalem clashed over values. We had a great tragedy for the Jewish people, but the new Rome, the United States, views itself as a new Jerusalem." The new Rome, the United States, views itself as a new Jerusalem. I don't know if you watched my video, America to Babylon, but it sure sounds like it, doesn't it? It definitely coincides. Personally, I found this to be a most stunning, startling, and eye-opening revelation coming from an Israeli prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, who, by the way, I also understand is a 33rd degree Freemason. For several years now, I have been trying to convince Christians of precisely what Netanyahu stated, that America is in Bible prophecy and is, in fact, the new Rome. But then Netanyahu went a step beyond that, stating that the new Rome, the United States, views itself as a new Jerusalem. Aside from a few fringe cult groups and British Israelists, I wasn't aware that the United States views itself as the new Jerusalem. What I was aware of, however, is that the Roman Catholic Church does indeed view itself, together with what it calls the communion of saints already in heaven, to whom Catholics direct their pagan prayers, as the new Jerusalem. The Catholic Church has for centuries viewed itself as the new Jerusalem. And to me, Netanyahu's stunning revelation here shows that he knows something that every American Christian also needs to understand and acknowledge, which is that the American government is operating, as it has since at least the time of the Civil War, under the thumb of the Roman Catholic Papacy, whose Jesuit soldiers have infiltrated and dominated every level of American government, as they have nations of Europe and basically every nation on earth. They've been going at these nations for centuries now. May I say that this is precisely the situation that John pictured here in the 17th chapter of Revelation. Some of you may have read Dave Hunt's book, titled his book, A Woman Rides the Beast, Exposing the Roman Catholic Cult, Roman Catholic Core. The reins on that empire, pictured by this ten-horned beast, are held by this harlotress woman, the Whore of Babylon. And for what I see as inescapable identification of this woman as being the Roman Catholic false church, the papacy itself, I'm going to summarize or restate briefly what I've stated before. We read here in verse 3 of this chapter. "So it carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication." Here John gives us a vivid description of the Roman Catholic hierarchy that in apparent intentional fulfillment of this passage, decks its bishops and cardinals in purple and scarlet colors, and has over the centuries amassed to itself untold riches, including control over the major central banks at the center of international commerce and trade. I'll get into that in coming messages, and the connection between the Vatican and the Rockefellers and the Rothschild dynasties. Upon her forehead was a name written: Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. The Roman Catholic Church has indeed and in fact perpetuated the Babylonian mystery religion, even making repeated use of that term mystery in its reference to its doctrines, its rituals, and its liturgy, from what they call the Mysterium Fidei, mystery of the faith, which is pronounced by the Babylonian priests in its abominable practice of the Eucharist, to the so-called 15 mysteries of the Rosary, as prayed to its virgin goddess Mary, the Blessed Mother of God and sinless co-redemptrix, a.k.a. Ashtoreth, to whom it builds shrines, referring to her as the Queen of Heaven, thereby perpetuating the abominable Babylonian idolatry for which Israel was condemned in Jeremiah 7, verse 18, and chapter 44, verse 17 to 25, condemns the worship of the Queen of Heaven. Verse 6, John says, "And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints, with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. When I saw her, I wondered with great admiration." Though many today, the Pope, Jesuits, try to bury or forget this undeniable fact of history, the Roman Catholic Papacy has the blood of millions of true Christian martyrs on its hands in a well-documented and undeniable history of many centuries of the most barbarous and cruel forms of torture imaginable inflicted on those martyrs, having ruthlessly butchered, burned, and buried many millions more Christian martyrs than pagan Rome ever dreamed of doing, or that Islam has done, or any other entity that people could name as fulfilling this passage. Let me read here in verse 9. "Here's a mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. Many cities on the planet, of course, can boast of having seven hills. Only Rome is known the world over as a city of seven hills, whose power also extends actually to cover a global membership of devoted Roman Catholics on all seven continents as well." So I could go into more detail, but we get the picture. There is no doubt whatsoever in my mind that this harlot in Revelation 17 is the Roman Catholic Papacy. There is in all of human history no other entity or religious system which this imagery here could represent, that satisfies all the elements of this prophecy, as does the Roman Catholic false church in its hierarchy. And we also see here a great picture of the power that this harlot religious empire wields over the first beast pictured in the chapter, in chapter 13 as well. She's seen here riding that beast, therefore holding its reins. And we see her in verse 18 that woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth, as Rome has done for centuries, as the popes did for many centuries until the Protestant Reformation, but it has now regained that power through the United States and the UN, which it basically controls. So this has been true of the papacy throughout most of Western civilization. The temporal power it lost at the time of the Reformation has now regained through its vassal state, the United States of America, and the New World Order that it has built through the UN. And I believe that Rome is now holding the reins of that beast, at least for a time, until such time as we read in verse 16 here, which will be fulfilled sometime later in the tribulation before our Lord's return, when we see that the ten horns, John writes, "Thou sawest upon the beast, he shall hate the whore, and make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire." And so then, full circle, back to the observation I made regarding these two entities, also seen in Revelation 13. Because at the second, it is the second beast of Revelation 13, the papacy of the Vatican, the harlot in this chapter, that has a major role in deceiving the world into taking the mark of the beast. It's Rome that does that. It's the Vatican. Up front, I mentioned that the Vatican is this very weekend hosting a well-publicized conference titled Exploring the Mind, Body, and Soul, How Innovation and Novel Delivery Systems Improve Human Health, talking about vaccines. This is a conference a world conference with dignitaries to basically promote these vaccines. I also mentioned this conference in my message 4 weeks ago. And the promotional material for the conference was stated as follows. Dr. Anthony Fauci, Chelsea Clinton, CEOs of pharmaceutical manufacturers Moderna and Pfizer, which created the COVID-19 vaccines, will be among the featured speakers at a healthcare conference next month, co-hosted by the Vatican's Pontifical Council for Culture. The Vatican says the May 6th through 8th Unite to Prevent online conference will bring together doctors, scientists, religious leaders, philanthropists, and others to discuss the latest breakthroughs in medicine, healthcare delivery and prevention, as well as the human implications and cultural impact of technological advances. The conference started this past Friday with an opening address from the Jesuit Dr. Frankenstein, Anthony Fauci. And then, guess who got to speak? Our beloved Chelsea Clinton, president of the Clinton Foundation. She got to speak. This is an article posted by LifeSite News, which, by the way, is a conservative Catholic news publication, anti-Pope Francis. They're against this Jesuit Pope. And they're posting a lot of, they have been posting a lot of good stuff exposing the whole vaccine and the entire fraudulent COVID-19 narrative. And they, too, got their entire channel kicked off of YouTube. LifeSite News, Catholic agency. This article says, breaking. At Vatican Conference, Chelsea Clinton calls for a global crackdown on anti-vaccine social media posts. I personally very strongly believe there has to be more intensive and intentional and coordinated global regulation of the content on social media platforms. So she wants more shutting down of free speech. And, of course, that's what the powers that be want. She, of course, does speak for the Clinton Foundation. This says Vatican City, May 7th. Chelsea Clinton has spoken out against freedom of vaccine critical speech at a Vatican conference dedicated to dialogue. Interesting contradiction there. This conference is dedicated to dialogue, and she's advocating against free speech. Speaking during a pre-recorded online meeting, Clinton, 41, responded to a question about so-called vaccine hesitancy regarding COVID-19 vaccines by saying that there must be a global effort to crack down on vaccine critical social media posts. I personally very strongly believe there has to be more intensive and intentional and coordinated global regulation of the content on social media platforms. She says, we know that the most popular video across all of Latin America for the last few weeks that now has tens of millions of views is just an anti-vax, anti-science screed that YouTube has just refused to take down. Oh, I don't know how they took our stuff down, but leaving this up. Clinton added that the anti-vaccine content created in the United States flourishes across the world by way of social media platforms. Her attempts to convince the manager of these sites to remove the material has not worked, she said. We know that because I've tried. Appealing to the leadership of these companies to do the right thing has just not worked, and so we need regulation. So Facebook shutting Truth down, YouTube shutting it down, all the major platforms are shutting it down, but now they're working on those that are still allowing it to continue. And so that is their agenda. I could go on and on. That's what's going on here. This is the rhetoric that's being spouted at this conference hosted by the Vatican. This is the entity, by the way, that will deceive the world into finally taking the mark of the beast. The papacy is calling together all these world leaders to basically promote the vaccine, and it's going to be the papacy that will deceive the world into taking the mark of the beast. I'm not saying that the vaccine is the mark of the beast, but it certainly is a precursor to it, at the very, very least. That's a lot for you to digest today. I'm going to break it off there for today. There's a lot more ground to cover and that I will cover. But for now, we'll break it off there. And I will ask Brother Jade to go ahead and close us with a word of prayer.
Holy Father, we thank you for